Good Thursday, everybody. Good back-to-back Thursday, LZ. The Lakers back at it again tonight after, well, I mean, let's just call it what it was. Not looking good at all yesterday against OKC. A chance at redemption in Orlando tonight against the Houston Rockets. And this is a team that they're probably going to have to play in the playoffs. It seems likely that that's probably their second-round matchup at this point. How big of a deal is it? Do they need to fix their problems, namely get the ball in the basket, make some open shots, defend in the backcourt, or is this still preseason 2.0?
I think this is a Clipper game. You know, I didn't brag. I should have, but, you know, I'm not a bragger, Travis. But I was absolutely correct when I was trying to tell you and Key that this game with the Clippers for the Lakers was going to be played like a real game and that a message was going to be sent. And that the guys were going to take it seriously. And obviously, when you look at the game, I was right with that, it was a message game. It was a game that both teams took very seriously. And we know this because there was 5 seconds left in the clock. Kawhi, AD, LeBron, and Paul George were all on the court. So it was an important game, and they treated it as such. This is very similar. I think the players know this is an important game. Isn't right in terms of shooting, but this is also a team that is riding high since, and they know that the Lakers may be an opponent, and they want to send us a message. And so it's important that we are able to do the same thing. Hit them back and let them know you don't want this in the second round. We don't want them leaving this game tonight, Travis, looking forward to our matchup. We want them leaving this game hoping that something fluky happens and that we don't match up. That's what you want this to happen. And the only way I won't feel that way is if the game starts and they decide to rest starters. If they decide to rest starters, then it's like, okay, they're taking a different approach. But if LeBron and AD are out there, that means that they know this is important.
Yeah, I think that LeBron and AD are going to play because they need to. I'm conflicted, genuinely conflicted, because I don't think these games mean a whole lot because the Lakers are the number one seed. The Lakers have shown what they are when they're clicking. So that's mostly where my heart lies. But also, the last thing you want to do is go play 8 games and have them be super uneven through this whole thing and really have a glaring issue, which I think they do right now, which is the inability to get the ball in the basket. If they just looked rusty and off and were taking bad shots and were having trouble getting good looks, then you just, okay, look, they're just out of sync. They'll figure it out. It's going to happen. It's not what's happening. What's happening is the offense is working. They're just not – they're missing.
Right.
They're getting open shots that just are not going in the basket. That, to me, is one of those things that you can't go through what it's going to be. By the time we get to the playoffs, you're talking the better part of 3+ weeks, right? You can't go 3 weeks shooting the ball poorly and then just expect the ball to start going in the hoop when the playoffs start. That's why I think tonight, I think, is a really good opportunity, or I shouldn't say opportunity, but I think there's a really good chance that LeBron goes out there and LeBron's. That instead of going out there and saying, all right, we're going to get Anthony Davis 10 shots in the first quarter, it's going to be a, give me the ball, let me get us going here, let me get a bunch of balls into the bucket, let us get cook in the way that we can, and then it'll just kind of open it up for everybody else, because they do need to have a game or two over the course of these next four that's just kind of, you know what it looked like pre-coronavirus, what it looked like pre-shutdown, what it looked like pre-bubble. You can't just say, oh, we're really good, it'll be good when we need it. You need to at least see some seeds of looking like you look, and so far we really haven't seen those seeds.
We haven't, and you know, other than some good stretches against the Clippers and some good stretches, you know, there were even some decent stretches yesterday, believe it or not. I mean, a couple of times when they trimmed the lead down to like 8 and 7 and 6 points, it was because they had a nice stretch where both offense and defense were clicking. And you were like going, oh, that's the team that locked in the number one seed. That's the team that's a favorite to win the championship. So there have been flashes. And I expect, to your point tonight, early in that first quarter, we're going to see a championship flash. You know, they're going to try and punch him in the mouth, not because they want to necessarily try and kill him in the first quarter, but because they need to get the cork off of the rim in the first quarter. They need to see that ball go in. They need to see it go in often to remind themselves of who they are.
There's no question in my mind either that watching that game yesterday, Disinterested is a step too far, but whatever's just short of that, flat, you know, listless, whatever that word is, that's what it felt like to me last night. Just a team that wasn't quite fully present. They're trying. I don't want to make it sound like they weren't out there trying to win the game, but we all know the difference between a team that is just from the jump coming at you 100% and a team that's kind of just playing the game. And the Lakers last night felt like a team that was just playing the game for more or less the entire night, because, like you said, they made a couple of runs to get it in the single digits, but there were very few moments in that game yesterday where you felt like the Lakers were going to win it. And that you can almost never say that about the Lakers. Even when they play poorly, they'll have a stretch here and there where you're like, oh, here it comes. It's about to happen. And then it just kind of fades away. Yesterday was the first time all season long where they haven't had a lead. And it wasn't just that. It's even when they were behind, it never felt like they were going to catch up.
Yeah, it was a weird game. And it's hard for me to, again, pounce on the offense because they really are getting good shots. I mean, the game against Toronto, you could be a little concerned because AD was getting triple teamed, and you wonder if this would be a formula to slow the Lakers down or to beat them. But then you remember that, yes, it's true, AD got the triple team, but we didn't lose because he was triple teamed. We lost because they didn't punish him for being triple teamed. And you punish a team for doubling and tripling by knocking down open shots. They don't have to be threes, by the way.
No.
They don't have to be threes. You know, once upon a time, they used to double players and the rock would swing and they still could get like a 15-footer that was open.
Or a layup.
In the old days, yeah. Or a layup. I was going to say, in the old days, when a guy got triple T, sometimes a guy would cut to the brim and actually get a layup, Travis, in the old days. So, you know, as long as we remember the fundamentals of basketball and don't get seduced into playing Houston's game, we'll be fine tonight. But if we get seduced into playing like Houston and we can't shoot like Houston, we're going to have another double-digit loss to this squad like we did the previous game that we played against them. And worse yet, we're going to give them false sense of confidence and we're going to walk away wondering what's going on. And we don't need that happening.
To a degree, yes. I do think, though, with the Rockets specifically, the more you play them, the more likely you are to beat them. Because what they do is unusual. You know what it's like? It's like playing a football team that runs the wishbone, right? If you are a traditional team and you run up against a football team that's doing that triple option stuff, it takes you a minute to figure it out. And, I mean, how many times do you see a really good team go up against, like, Navy or Georgia Tech or one of those teams? Like, what the hell is this? Why can't they kill these guys? Georgia Tech stinks. You should be able to run circles around them. And it just doesn't go that way because it's just so unusual. The Rockets kind of bring that. But if you're playing them in a series, the novelty of what it is they're doing tends to fade. I'm curious what the Laker fans think. How worried are you about what you've seen in the bubble so far? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. LZ, the Big Ten football players have now put together a letter saying we want things as well. We have similar concerns as our Pac-12 brothers do. We would also like to have the following issues addressed. This is exactly how this stuff changes, because every other time we've had this conversation before, and I'm not talking about you and me, I'm talking about college athletes standing up for their rights, standing up for their value in their sport. It's a team here. It's a guy here. It's a player trying to organize a union, but, you know, far away from everyone else. This is the Pac-12. This is the Big Ten. And they're saying, hey, listen, this is what we need or we're not going to play. It's real this time. It's not going anywhere.
Well, we knew this wasn't going to be an insulated or an isolated occurrence. I mean, Bomani Jones wrote a fantastic piece on the background of this for the Undefeated. If you haven't read it, you should definitely read it, listeners, because it's a great piece about how you take passion, mix it with organization and a plan, and then follow the steps necessary to execute in order to arrive at a change. You know, this is some of the things that we've been witnessing around the country since the uprisings has begun, that the passions have moved out of the streets and they're into legislative areas. They're into budgeting areas for municipalities, how money is being spent. And the college students have done the exact same thing. They've taken all the passion of what's been going on, and now they're organized, Travis. And you knew that another conference was ready to follow suit, because we knew from the initial reports that hundreds and hundreds of student athletes were involved in a Zoom call, multiple Zoom calls. And we know what they wanted to do in those Zoom calls, and we know they had the fortitude to continue to follow through. And we also know they have public opinion on their side. So I'm not blindsided. I don't think anyone should be blindsided that the Big Ten has followed suit. We should expect other conferences to follow suit, because this thing isn't going away, to your point, Travis. It's not going away because the problem hasn't gone away. This isn't this isn't an answer looking for a question. This is an answer that's coming after hundreds of years of questions.
It's important too, like you said, that the Big Ten has followed suit of the Pac-12. And it's important as well that the SEC get involved in this, because I'm going to paint with a super broad brush here, and there are obviously exceptions to this, but it's generally true. The Pac-12 cares far less about sports and football than the rest of the country. It's why they get excluded from tournaments. It's why they don't get recognized in the rankings the way that some of these other places do. There's also this perception that the West Coast, California in particular, is full of a bunch of wacko socialists who want all this stuff for free. Like I said, broad brush strokes, but it's easy for the rest of the country. It's easy for the rest of the country to look at the Pac-12 and go, ah, those guys, they don't even give a damn about football. What are they doing? I don't need to pay attention to that. But the Big Ten is not that. The Big Ten cares deeply about their sports. The Big Ten, that area of the country, is far more conservative. That area of the country is far less likely to be dismissed as, oh, look at them, there they go again. And then ultimately you have the SEC, where college football is king, where it is the single most important thing in that entire region. If those guys also say, hey, listen, our Pac-12 brothers, our Big Ten brothers, we're with them, we're not doing it, that's the tipping point. And we may be there already, but they could put this thing over the top, because there's no misunderstanding what college football means to the SEC. There's no misunderstanding the politics of that part of the country and what typically the response to those sorts of requests are like. And it's changed. And if they get it's starting to happen. If it was just the Pac-12, I don't think it could be dismissed, but it could be more easily ignored. But if you get the Midwest and you get the South on board on this, it's over. It's a wrap. They're going to get what they want.
Yo, yo, yo.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, what the students are asking for isn't the world. It's not unreasonable. They don't want to risk their health. They don't want to risk the health of their loved ones. And they don't want you continue to come into their neighborhoods to recruit athletes. But then when athletes need to make sure that they're okay, or that the communities are okay, it's someone else's problem. They want that dynamic to change. You know, it's you know, not to toot my own horn, but it's what I talked about in the column that I wrote for the Times, which is, you know, we love writing the story, the sob stories about the guy who came from the hood and then got to college and then was trying to do good. We love telling those stories. And we love telling those stories because it makes us feel good. But guess what? There are a whole bunch of kids that are still in that neighborhood that need help. So while we're using these resources to highlight the one guy who could run fast and jump high and how that helped him get out of the hood, the real story isn't his victory. It's the fact that we're still allowing so many defeats, and that these young men are saying, we're tired of you guys coming in, utilizing our black and brown bodies to make millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, for this industry. But this industry is not caring about my home and my community and my neighborhoods. And so I applaud these young men for keeping on focus, recognizing their leverage and utilizing it.
And keep in mind, it's not going to be easy either. As we're having this conversation, I'm looking at the TV, and on the crawl underneath, there was about the Pac-12, where Larry Scott reportedly has already said that the economic demands that the players are making are, quote, not realistic. So they're not just going to go, oh, you guys want, okay, yeah, you know what, you're right. We've been doing this wrong for a long time. They're still going to have to fight like hell. I think what we talked about yesterday and what you mentioned a minute ago, the audience is different. forever, really, for as long as college sports have been big business, as long as we've been talking about athletes deserving more, the vast majority of respondents to that has always been, then they're already getting more than I ever got. Why should they get a car? Why should they get paid? Why should they get this, that, and the next thing? I had to work nights to pay for school. Okay, yeah, good for you. I'm glad that you did that, and I'm glad that you were able to get those done. But the fact of the matter is, no one was coming to watch you do your English homework. Billions of dollars are spent to come watch these guys throw footballs. Okay, we can argue about our priorities. That's a fine argument. But if billions of dollars are being spent and earned to show Keaton Slovis play football, Keaton Slovis should share in this. And I think for the first time ever, people kind of get that. I think for the first time ever, people are like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that the guy needs to become a millionaire overnight for it, but getting a scholarship certainly isn't a fair trade. And people are listening to that for the first time ever. It's an exciting time. It feels like it's about to change. All right, Lakers Last Night is sponsored by Wingstop, freshly made just for you wings, sauced and tossed in 11 mouthwatering flavors. Get yours delivered to your door at wingstop.com. Wingstop, where flavor gets its wings. Ryan Hollins will tell us how worried he is about where the Lakers are in the bubble. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. But all right, Lakers and Rockets tonight in Orlando. Game two of a back-to-back for LA. Joining us right now, longtime NBA player, friend of the show, host of the Opinionated Seven Footers podcast, our pal Ryan Hollins. Ryan, how you feeling?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I'm feeling good.
Good, good, good. We're feeling good, too. But we could feel more good if you tell us some good news about the Lakers shooting and what they can do to get some shots to fall.
Here's the truth of the matter. Everything with the Lakers, and this is the biggest scare and concern, revolves around LeBron James. With Rajon Rondo out, there aren't too many guys that create shots, not just for themselves, but create for others. Because the best thing that Rondo does is get in the lane and kick out and get guys good looks. There's a lot of guys who can take shots, maybe not too many who can make them and get makes for others. So I've seen this before too many times from LeBron James. He kind of, you know, lethargically makes his way through the regular season, may or may not show up in big games. We never know. And then come playoff time, he's ready to turn it on. So LeBron James is, you know, in a sense, doing the smart thing, making sure he doesn't get injured. But we haven't seen the real LeBron James show up yet. So is it a cause for concern? Yes, because you don't have another guy to get everyone else open looks. And guys, we talked about this before. Anthony Davis is one of the greatest finishers that we've seen in our league, which means when someone gives him a pass on a pick and roll or a dive to the rim, he's one of the best. But if you're going to say, hey, Anthony Davis, here's the ball, go out and get me, you know, 30 or 40 points a night, that's not his game.
So, Ryan, if you're Frank Vogel, what do you do? If it's what you're talking about, where LeBron is kind of the engine that makes all these other things happen, do you say, hey, LeBron, I need you to go full LeBron tonight? Or do you just know that LeBron will do that and let this thing take its natural course? Because four games into basically the halfway point of the bubble season, the Lakers are just kind of flat-footed right now. It's not terrible, but it's certainly not what it looked like pre-pandemic.
Hey, man, I had my concerns about Frank Vogel coming in, but he's done the best that he can. Why? There's two things that he's been able to do. One, he established a defensive presence with the Lakers. That's something that he had been missing the last 6 years. So whether LeBron James have been playing great or not, that's a team that's locked up on the defensive end. That saves you possessions. Secondly, LeBron James is LeBron James. There's not too much poking and prodding you're going to do. He's a veteran. He's seen more. He's got more NBA playoff experience than probably than the entire Eastern Conference teams put together, okay, if you add it up. So when you're looking at LeBron, you let LeBron do LeBron-type things, but you are going to ask a little more of Anthony Davis. He's doing a good job experimenting with Deion Waiters, seeing what he can become. He's shown that he can be a little bit of a playmaker in possessions more than what we thought. It's not just always just Waiters Island with him, but you got to find someone that can get in the lane. You saw Quinn Cook got some extended minutes last night, and that's a tough matchup playing against Chris Paul. But ultimately, you know, he's going to hang his hat on the defensive end of the floor, and I think that's the right thing to do. But guys have to stay ready and sharp, you know. And, you know, the tough part is he's platooning guys in. You don't know who the wings are. Is it going to be JR? Is it going to be Danny Green? Is it going to be Deion Waiters? Is it Quinn Cook? You know, there's kind of a long jab, and they're trying to figure out who that next guy is. And right now it looks like Deion Waiters has been stepping up. But now when you're losing to a team like OKC or not even competing, it is a problem. But the Lakers have a lot of film and a lot of, you know, stuff to jump on. But, I would not be panicking if I'm a Lakers fan.
If you are a Laker fan and you listen to what you're saying, it makes it sound as if the offense is stagnated. But that's not my opinion, Ryan. I don't think that the absence of Rondo is the issue, because from my perspective, they're getting good looks. They're getting wide open looks. They aren't falling. I think that's a different thing. It's not. I don't see Alex Caruso struggling to get a shot. I'm not seeing Danny Green struggling to get a shot. I'm seeing those shots struggle to go down.
Okay, well, I'll give you this. You asked me when Avery Bradley went out or Rondo got hurt, what was going to be the biggest factor? This is the factor right here. Not that you don't have guys that hit shots, but you have guys out of rhythm. You have to learn guys again. Avery Bradley was so special because Avery Bradley could sprint to the corners, harass the other team's point guard or two guard all night long, and get one or two shots, and he'd go two for two, one for two. You know, he was a shot maker, not a shot taker. He was comfortable in that role. You still have to find out who these other guys are. And you know, Danny Green, that's my guy right there, but Danny can go hot and cold. You know, he's going to show up when you need him the most. That's not in question, but Danny can go hot and cold. That's the life of a shooter. But that's why Avery Bradley was so effective. That's why Rajon Rondo in these moments would be called upon saying, hey, you know, we're not getting a great look. Now, maybe it's a good look, but that's not necessarily a rhythm look. When I play with Rondo, one of the small things he would do, he would pride himself on target passing. What's target passing? He would come out in warm-ups, and he would hit you, I mean, literally square in your hand, square in the numbers. And then you have a wide-open shot. So, while LZ, you're looking at it, the naked eye says those are good looks. Rondo's going to give you a on-target, perfect look in rhythm to where he almost makes the shot for you. You had no choice but to make it. You know those highlights when someone crosses over, you go around the back, and it's a perfect shot. You know, you got to make it. You can knock it down. Rondo just gets you in rhythm.
Ryan Hollins joining us here. He's the host of the opinionated Seven Footers podcast. We get to see the Rockets tonight against the Lakers. That's right. A couple of them, no less. Is it different this time for the Rockets, Ryan? I mean, we've seen them be really good before. We've seen them go deep into the playoffs, but ultimately they all come up a little bit short. Is there any reason to think that this time might be different for Houston?
You should. And if I'm the Lakers, I'm absolutely concerned. If I'm the Clippers, I'm really, really worried. Why? Because of Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook has fallen into a role that is unique that I've never seen before. So we talk about points in the paint, right? We'd always think of a big man rebounding the basketball or getting post-ups or diving to the rim in a pick and roll, right? Well, Russell Westbrook gets the paint points for the team, and he's a legit point guard driving to the basket. So he gets the ball on the wing. He's not even thinking about jump shot. He may take four or five threes or jumpers a game. The rest of the time, he's driving to the hole, scoring or kicking out. So Houston is interesting in that, hey, what if Anthony Davis gets two fouls trying to guard Russell Westbrook? Now our whole game plan is messed up. Hey, JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard are huge parts of the Lakers' defensive strategy and lineup all year long. And now those two can't play in the series. So you'd have to change what you do best. And now do I want to exhaust LeBron James playing the power forward spot when he's essentially been the point guard all year long on the defensive end? So Houston presents problems for the entire league. Anyone who tells you that they're not to be worried about is they're a darn fool. Now, obviously, if you buckle down, you guard the perimeter well, you stop penetration, and you guard James Harden, yeah, it can get really ugly for small ball. That's a big if. If I'm in the league, I'm absolutely worried about the Houston Rockets and especially the Lakers.
I agree with you. You know, I talked about the fact that they have arguably the most decorated, you know, sans championships. But from an individual award perspective, I mean, they've racked them all up. There's not nothing. That's not a whole lot left. They've been that good in their careers individually, and now they're together. But I'm also concerned about the backcourt that's in Portland, Oregon, and what Dame Lillard and CJ could do to this squad. How do you assess our defense when it comes to the backcourt since the Lakers have been in the bubble? We've talked about our shooting woes, but do we have a grasp of being able to lock down these backcourt mates who have been deadly?
Listen, man, you hit it right on the head, and that's another concern. When you asked about Avery Bradley and Rondo had a lot of success with the Pelicans in the playoff series a few years ago against Damian Lillard. You know what Avery Bradley can do, chasing guys around the perimeter. We don't need to talk about that. But ultimately, I don't worry too much about the Portland matchup. It's not that you're going to be able to stop Lillard. Is there more of a traditional power forward, you know, guard, shooting guard, point guard type of team? You know, so now you can play a Dwight Howard. You can play JaVale McGee against those guys. And while Damian Lillard may go off for points, they don't have anybody to stop LeBron James. You know, so the Portland team is special. They're a headache. You know that they have the chemistry, but defensively, they wouldn't be able to hang with the Lakers. And the Lakers are a team that are just good enough that if you allow them to score, they can make everything else happen from there. So I don't worry. And LeBron has just had a field day. That's a very poor matchup because I would argue and counter and say, well, who's going to guard LeBron on that team? Carmelo's improved. He's playing excellent basketball, but I wouldn't consider Carmelo necessarily a guy locked in on the defensive end to chase LeBron James off the screens. And if you got Nurkic showing out, it's going to be a field day. We all know that poster that LeBron put Nurkic on already, even though he's playing good basketball. It would just be a poor matchup for Portland, but it is a team to worry about.
Ryan, very quickly, like you talked about with worrying about Portland right there and how you feel about the Rockets, what do you think the chances are that we get an all-LA Western Conference final, or is one of the two of them going to fall by the side?
It's going to happen, brother. Unless Houston, like we mentioned, comes in and spoils the party, is going to happen. And I know the Clippers haven't looked great, but, you know, you still have Kawhi Leonard over there who at any moment can take a series over. Just ask Philadelphia 76ers. Ask the Golden State Warriors. So you got Kawhi and Paul George. Even if you space everybody out, you know, Lemon Pepper Lou still at Magic City. Montrez still dealing with family issues. They're going to be fine. And, you know, all due respect to them, please don't take that out of context. But even if the Clippers are shorthanded and not playing great, they're going to be matching up with the Lakers unless there's something unforeseen that goes and happens. But I would absolutely be worried about Houston. But other than that, if everything goes as planned, we're going to, hey, guys, we're going to have some golden basketball. Just unfortunately, it won't be in L.A. It'll be in the bubble.
Ryan Hollins, one of the co-hosts of the Opinionated Seven Footers, a friend Woo-hoo! Of the program, and of course, longtime NBA player. Ryan, always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Hey, appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, LZ, I'm going to see if it's taken me, let me see here, 3.5 hours, but I'm going to see if I can finally convince you that what happened yesterday at Petco Park was actually exciting. That's next on The Morning Show, 710 ESPN.
This is Everlast, LZ.
You know what, LZ? Tiger yes, may have known what he's talking about. Tiger's on the course. The PGA Championship's taking place Harding Park in San Francisco. And his first hole, he's kind of all over the place with his first couple of shots, recovered with a nice little wedge. But he came into this thing saying the weather was going to affect him, that he wasn't going to get loose. And at least early so far, he has not quite been striking the ball the way that you would expect Tiger Woods to strike it.
Well, I mean, listen, if we're being completely honest with each other, since his unexpected Masters win, it really hasn't been much of a follow-up. He hasn't played a great deal of golf before the quarantine. You could imagine during the quarantine, maybe not as much as he's been out there. It is a very good chance, and this isn't me throwing Tiger shade or Tiger hate, but this is a very good chance that he had his Jimmy Connors run. It's a good chance yeah. that he had that one last good push, and he made good with it, and now, you know, we're just going to be saddled with this version of Tiger Woods for the foreseeable future.
I hope not. I think you might be right. I certainly hope not. And here's the other thing, too. The weather has not changed at all for these guys since we were kind of giving Michael Collins a hard time for being bundled up like he was going on an expedition to the North Pole. Tiger's got a turtleneck around his neck. He's got a sweater on. I mean, he looks like yeah. he's playing in some event in the end of November, not in the middle of August.
Yeah, he's got that Keyshawn scarf thing going on that I'm really thrilled about right now. Because it's not a turtleneck. It's like a full-on, like, wraparound, like, probably like a $10,000 scarf made from organic silkworms or something like that. But whatever well, it not? Is, why not? But whatever it is, I'm sure the weather is a little bit chilly for all these Floridians. But I just checked the weather report. It's not supposed to be below 55 degrees. So, I mean... it's not like it's, you know, it's unseasonably cold. It's San Francisco. It's moderate. It's a high of like 68 and a low of like 56, 55. It's not well, that cold out.
Nobody's going to confuse these guys for lumberjacks. I mean, they're professional golfers. I mean, that's coming from me, and I love golf, and I love watching these guys, but that's just kind of the way that it goes. All right. Dodgers get a nice one last night.
That's a nice long putt. Is that a nice putt.
Another birdie for Tiger right there, I think. They're kind of recapping his round right now. That was a nice one. Hit the back of the hole with a little bit of speed. So he's – what is he?
Hercules.
Ooh, he's one under so far.
He's right there.
Two under.
Yeah,
two under.
Right there.
Making some putts. That helps a lot.
Yeah, he's right there. He's not bad.
Look, there's nothing more important for golf than this guy being around for the weekend and him making sure that he's in the mix, because Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka and Justin Thomas, the guys that are kind of dominating the sport right now, with all due respect to them, nobody gives a damn. I mean, they just don't. They kind of sort of care about Phil Mickelson. They kind of sort of care about maybe, you know, a guy like Rory McIlroy, but maybe not. And it's Tiger or golf people. That's it. That's it. All right.
You know, it takes a lot to make people care about a new champion. It's very rare that we fall in love with a new person out the gate. I mean, Tiger was a new champion that we fell in love with, but we loved him because we knew him for such a long time and was waiting for that moment. But I think it's hard for any champion in any sport to come in with momentum, to snatch momentum from someone who's still playing and then establish themselves.
Oh, you know, maybe 100% true.
Brooks will make us care if he gets three in a row. Who knows?
Yeah, but here's the point. Two in a row never happens, and he's done that, and we still don't care. Maybe three will help a little bit, but the fact of the matter is Tiger did something that doesn't happen very often. He made golf about not golf. Tiger's events were sporting events. They weren't golfing events. They were events that if you were a sports fan, you had to check in on. There's nobody else that has done that. There's been things like Rory McIlroy, for instance, has won, I want to say, four majors. If you're not a golf person, you don't care what Rory McIlroy does. You just don't. That Tiger, we knew who he was before he showed up because, A, he had a stage mother father. We knew who he was before he showed up because he had this crazy amateur career. We knew who he was before he showed up because, let's be honest, he was the only one that looked like he looked out on the golf course, so that was different. So we're paying attention to that. Yep. And then he showed up and just kicked everyone's ass as a 20-year-old. So this was a brand new thing, and he had immediate success, and then he went on that crazy run. It wasn't just a golf thing. It was a what-the-hell-is-this thing.
Yeah, you're right. No one's going to care about Brooks.
No.
Or Brooke or Books or Look.
You had it right the first time. It's Brooks. And he's great. He's kind of funny, but he's funny in a golf kind of way. He's not funny in a sports kind of way. So we will definitely see. That's Tiger's off to a good start. You're right. He's not hitting it great, but he's making putts, which helps a ton. Have I convinced you that what happened last night was exciting, or are you still on the scary angle?
It wasn't exciting.
Of course it was.
It was scary.
A game-ending play at the plate is not exciting. What's more exciting?
No, it's not, because of how we got there. You have to remember, my mind was on the fact that Kenley was getting ready to blow it. That's where my mind was at. So it was hard for me to shift emotionally from an, oh no, oh my God, what is happening, to yay, play at the plate. Like, it took me a minute.
Hold on a second. It wasn't yay, play at the plate. That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm saying is, oh my God, look at what just happened. They just threw him out from left field. I mean, that's amazing. It wasn't like, yay, Chris Taylor threw him out. It's not that kind of exciting. It's, I think we're going to lose. Holy blank, we didn't lose. All right, that was awesome. It was one of those kind of excitings.
I guess. I mean, I don't know, man. I guess if we had came back at the ninth and then that play happened, maybe I would call it exciting. But it was like we're on the verge of coughing up the lead. We're on the verge of coughing up the win. And so I was like, oh, hell no. And to me, that just had me in a different place. It's like when I get ready to go back in the day to get that Popeye's chicken sandwich. And it's like, oh, hell yeah. I'm about to get this sandwich. Yeah, dog. Yeah. And then they tell me that I'm out. And it's like, huh. All right, then I guess I'll just have your other chicken. It's still chicken. But my mind was somewhere else. I still got the good chicken. I still got the red beans and rice. So it wasn't a loss, but I wanted that chicken sandwich. I had a chicken sandwich last night, Travis, and I ended up with just a piece of chicken because Kenley almost blew it.
No, what this was. I do, but I don't think you're accurate. I think I'm gonna continue your chicken sandwich analogy. What this was you got in line to get your sandwich. You're excited to get the sandwich, and you see a whole bunch of sandwiches there ready to go. And you're getting closer and closer, and there's fewer and fewer sandwiches. And then right before you get to order, the last sandwich gets taken out of the tray, and you're thinking, oh, damn, I'm not going to get a sandwich. And then you get up there and like, you know what? We got one more in the back. And you're like, yes, awesome. I've got one more sandwich that I get to eat because they were saving one for me. And that's what Chris Taylor did last night. He threw you a sandwich from deep left field and threw out Grisham at the plate to save your chicken sandwich.
After Kenley Jansen told me he had about 5 or 6 chicken sandwiches in back. That's what I'm saying, dog. This is what I'm saying. I was under one direction emotionally, and then Kenley threw me for a loop. And you're right. I should be grateful that we had a fantastic play at the plate to end the game, and Chris Taylor was absolutely phenomenal in the execution of that play. I'm grateful for that. But I'm the coach that remembers you dropped that touchdown pass in the first quarter. And that's why we needed the field goal with the last 5 seconds left in the fourth quarter to win the game. Had you caught that touchdown pass in the first quarter, we wouldn't have been in that situation.
Man, I don't want to play for you. That's for sure. I'm that coach. Yeah, I don't want to play for you.
Yeah. Also, the good thing is that you play for them, you get chicken sandwiches and cocktails, though. So you get rewarded.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I like what you said about the execution. If you are a baseball person, like I like to think of myself as, the little things that make baseball exciting, you could not execute that play more perfectly than Chris Taylor did in left field. And I feel it's important to mention it again. Chris Taylor's a shortstop. Chris Taylor is an infielder and did it perfectly in left field. Just an absolutely brilliant play by him. Dodgers off to a fantastic start off night. And then, of course, another series with the Giants coming up next. Crosstalk with George Sedano coming up next. Speaking of cool, refreshing drinks, we can go right into our snake draft here. What's going on, George? How are you feeling?
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
I am fantastic.
What's up, sir?
Hey.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you guys. You guys have got enough time together here in the not-too-distant future. So yeah. let's get right to this.
By the way, real quick.
Yes.
Can we sit here and, like, I've never heard – look, Travis, you've been in radio for a long time. LZ, you've been in radio for 4 years. We've all been part of different lineup changes. I have never heard a lineup change being sponsored before. I am not knocking that. I'm saying that as a credit to the sales staff, but that is impressive what I just heard right now.
You're right. You are absolutely right about that.
Are you suggesting that we're being paid to change things up?
I don't think so, but it is an amazing concept. I've never actually heard a lineup change being sponsored before, but that is just impressive. It stood out to me there.
All right. This is, our final snake draft, George. This is the last one that we're going to do on the morning show. LZ is off next week, so this is our last chance. I'm going to give you the two lists. Just so you know, this has also never happened before. I have never been on a 2-snake draft winning streak until this week.
Oh.
So this would make 3 in a row if I get this one. The topic is favorite.
He's new. He's new, George. He's new to winning. I mean, I've had multiple.
Are you saying that Travis is new money? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that he's the Golden State Warriors and I'm the Lakers.
That's fine. I'll be the Warriors. I'm very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Here's team number one. Margarita, a Manhattan.
Wait. What? Yeah. So what, is it just alcoholic drinks? I don't know the subject.
Yes. Our favorite cocktails.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So margarita.
Yeah.
Manhattan.
Yeah.
A Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
And a Cosmo.
Uh-huh.
Team one.
Yeah.
Team two is a martini.
Uh-huh.
Old fashioned.
Uh-huh.
A Bloody Mary. And a Cuba Libre.
Ooh. Man, let me tell you something. It's crazy that this is the last snake draft because this is as tight a snake draft as we've had. I'm going to go team one simply because I don't look at Bloody Mary as like a – while it is useful and used a lot, I don't see Bloody Mary in the same class as all the other seven that were labeled in this particular snake draft.
Bloody Mary is not even in the same class.
It's interesting that you say that. So you picked LZ's team, first of all.
Right. And you almost sold me with Cuba Libre, obviously. Yeah. But
well, sure. I thought I had a chance with that with you, at least.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. When I picked Bloody Mary, George, I did it knowing exactly what you were saying. Some people hate those things because it's got tomato juice and that's not for everybody.
Right.
But you also said that's a drink. You can't go to a brunch. You can't go to a lunch. You can't go to a golf course and not see a Bloody Mary. They're ubiquitous. They are everywhere. I know that not everybody loves them, but it's incredibly popular. That's why it's on my list.
It is popular. Like I said, yeah, it definitely gets – it has volume. But I feel like the quality of it is certainly under – you know, I would say in some regards, even under protest, like I would never drink a Bloody Mary. Never. And I have drank pretty much every
never.
I've tasted it. It is gross. My old man used to love tomato juice. My old man used to put tomato juice in his beer. Occasionally.
That's a Michelada. Those are
right.
I
am not a tomato. Now, but this was way before that this became a popular thing. I am not a tomato juice person. So because of my own sensibilities, I have to go with one. But it is very close. And I will not shun anyone that likes a Bloody Mary. It's just not my, in this case, I was going to say cup of tea, but cup of Bloody Mary.
What's the number one pick for you? If you had the first pick, what are you taking?
If I had the first pick, if we're going for just like quality and also like volume, you know, I would probably say Jack and Coke is in the conversation, right? Just because a lot of people drink that. You know, Martini is up there. Cosmo is up there. Though Cosmo, I feel like more skewed towards women than Martinis, whereas it's more unisex.
Women are people, too.
No, I understand. But most men don't drink Cosmopolitans. You know what I'm saying? Like, whereas men drink Martinis.
Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. I'd tear up a Cosmo.
Yeah, I know most men will drink a Martini. Yeah, I would go Martini is probably in that conversation, you know? Like, Manhattan is good. Old-fashioned. I'm a brown liquor person. So, I mean, old-fashioned Manhattan for me, I'm just trying to think overall. I know a lot of people don't drink the brown liquor. You know what I mean?
The only thing with me with the Bloody Mary was that I don't do Bloody Marys during the course of the week. For me, it's like a weekend brunch cocktail. So I wanted to make sure I had drinks listed that fit almost every part of the day and every week.
Yeah, that's fair.
Don't discriminate against Wednesday Bloody Marys, LZ. I'm not here for that.
You know what? Travis is about to hit a Thursday Bloody Mary right now. What are you talking about?
Absolutely. Sonata Show is next. We'll see you here tomorrow morning. The Morning Show, 710 ESPN.